Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. You know how important it is for people to leave reviews and ratings and comments on iTunes, right?
All that. I love it when people on YouTube tell me to do that. Yes.
Right. Well, it's very important, and we appreciate everybody who does it, and we've had some really good ones of late. Someone called us the best podcast on any platform. Someone said good stuff. Someone said perfect score. And then we got to today. And
did someone write a bad review?
Well, it's not a bad review. It's also not a good review. It's like a middle-of-the-road review, which I would argue is worse than a bad review. This is by somebody who calls themselves Fuckboy125.
Okay.
So great name.
Mm-hmm.
The headline is a fan.
Okay.
Then it says, enjoy you guys. But that heat is missing lately. That heat is missing lately. And this was left yesterday.
Mm-hmm. After we've had Rick Ross, after we've had Lil Brother.
After Big Crit.
After everybody has been telling us.
That we've been doing all right.
All right.
Or better than all right.
All right.
They've been telling us we've been doing great.
I want to hear this guy out, though.
Oh, no, but that's it. That's all that's been left. The heat's been missing lately.
Does it say how many stars you left?
3 stars. So right in the middle. Again, not 1 and not 5.
I am a fan, but the heat has been missing lately.
Heat's been missing lately.
I don't know what to do with that. I wish there was more to it.
No, it's just like, I'll let you know that you're doing shitty.
You used to be good.
But I won't tell you why.
Yeah. This is like a breakup.
I need closure.
How do we get Fuckboy125 on the podcast?
We had Rick Ross on the podcast. Today we have Jeezy on the podcast.
We had Little Brother in the middle.
Yo, people love that Little Brother episode. I don't know what to do. So, guys, if we're doing a bad job, if we've truly lost the heat.
Yeah, but
leave a comment.
No, but leave a comment, but leave more context.
Yeah. Let us know in full. Like, hit us on Twitter.
It's a little self-masochistic, right? Where it's just like, I want to know why I'm shitty.
Right. Yeah. What are we doing wrong?
How do we get the juice back?
You know, we've been running with this third favorite podcast thing for a while.
I feel like...
Should it be like...
Yeah, Fuckboy125s, we're just...
No, it should be like A Waste of Time with It's the Real.
You used to be your third favorite.
Working on it.
Yeah. Under construction.
Yeah, guys, listen, we have a good... Well, I thought it was a good podcast. You know, Jeezy's here today, and felt like a good booking, but maybe not.
Yeah, who knows?
Maybe not.
I don't know.
Jeezy's just, you know, 10 years in the game, and legendary albums, and verses, and collaborations, and... I mean, we talk about all that, but
who knows?
Yeah, maybe it's like a waste of time with It's the Real. You know what?
We tried.
Yeah, I promise. This is me.
Mm-hmm.
This is Eric speaking. I love when Joe Budden does that, too.
Mm-hmm.
He refers to himself in the third person.
Mm-hmm.
If it's up to Eric, we'll try to make it better, you know? Jeezy's on the podcast today, and this is not the first time we've met Jeezy.
No, the first time I met him, I interviewed him for Rolling Stone. This is probably like 6 years ago.
Well, it's whenever he had the line, my house so big, my room's got rooms.
Yeah.
Because you asked him about it.
And, yeah.
Because Hannibal Buress had made it into a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, yeah, Jeezy, it's called Closets.
Yeah.
Right.
And Jeezy... was just like, get a bigger house. Which is a pretty good response.
I think it's a great response. He's actually a really, really funny guy.
Yeah, so I interviewed him, and I asked him a question about an AK-47, like, just in passing, and he was like, do you know what an AK is? I was like, yes, I asked you the question.
Right.
Know what it is.
I listen to rap music.
Yeah.
I know what an AK is.
I know what an AK is. And so he said, I'm going to get you an AK for Christmas.
Because this was around the fall.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like November.
So we actually did see him before Christmas.
Well, we interviewed him for MTV.
Yeah. So whatever, a month or two later.
And I walk up to him and I'm like, hey, by the way, you know, I just interviewed you. You said you were going to give me an AK. And he said, I didn't forget. And he pointed to his man on the couch and he said, he's got it.
So you got your AK?
I did not.
Oh, you didn't travel through the airport back to New York?
Felt like I...
With the AK?
Felt like not the best time to do that.
But the best time to bring it up again was when he came back here,
mm-hmm.
now in our house with his team.
No AK.
Well, no, he did say it's outside. It's in the car.
Yeah, I just have to go out and get it.
Yeah, he said it's got...
I mean, the nice thing to do would be for him to bring it inside, like a house gift.
Just a nice welcome to the neighborhood.
Yeah, some people bring over Jell-O mold. Some people bring over AK-47.
Listen, man, no judgment.
No judgment.
Just trying to bring the heat back, right?
Listen, I got the heat. I'm just waiting for Jeezy to bring it in.
Jeff, when do you want to get into this?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Terrence Day, a.k.a. TM106 in Park.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. I got an old bitch, a.k.a. she feels in her knees when I'm about to make it rain.
It's Young Joseph from the bottom of the a.k.a. Snowman, a.k.a. Mr. 104.
Here's your third favorite podcast, Waste Time, and it's the real.
Bang, bang, pow.
Jeezy, what's happening?
What's happening?
Yo, thanks for coming through, number one.
Come on, man, pull up.
Yo.
Gift in the whole nine.
Yeah.
So the AK, I promise you.
Yeah.
It's in the car.
Yeah.
Cool. It's my personal one.
Appreciate that.
Might want to wipe the fingerprints off.
Yeah.
Listen, I got you.
Oh, you're re-gifting.
Yeah.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Yo, congratulations on your new album.
For sure.
It's all we've been listening to over here. I promise you that.
Okay, so that's where y'all got all the gun sounds?
Yeah. Yo, well.
Makes sense.
The Gunna track is fire. I love that back-to-back with the Ty Dolla $ign track.
Yes, sir. Yes,
oh,
sir.
Yeah, with Ball Greasy.
Yeah.
That shit's, like, dope.
Yeah, man. It's that Jeezy flow, baby. Bringing it back.
How has your press run been?
It's been great, man. I mean, just running around New York City.
What's the most tired question that you get, like, all the time?
Tired?
Yeah.
They all good.
Yeah,
they're not
all good.
That's not true.
Anytime somebody want to know something is a good thing. You know what I mean? So for me, it's just like, as long as it ain't no police shit, I'm cool.
Yeah, well, all right. We want to ask all the questions.
I don't want to send anybody to jail.
About right. Your whole career, how you made it from A to B.
Right.
And among things that you never get asked about, Boys in the Hood.
Right.
A fire fucking idea, fire music.
Shouts out to Kim Porter for that. Rest in heaven, baby.
How did it come to be?
Kim Porter, which was Puffy's...
longtime partner. Yeah.
She knew one of my... she knew a guy named Block that actually had the group. And at the time, I was working with Jazzy Faye. And we were all in the same studio. And... it just came about. They actually asked me, had me to do a record. The first record I ever did with them was in the group was Them Boys.
That was your first record?
First record with them and all. And Puff called shortly after. He was like, yo, I want you to be a part of this group. And I'm just like, because my solo career was taking off. I had Trapper Die in the Streets. I was like, I don't know. I just got my deal with Def Jam. And at the time, Jay-Z had just came in for president when Kevin Lyles stepped away. So it was like, we was all in cahoots. So it was like, you know, I just told Puff, like, I tell you what, I'm gonna move my album back a month, right? And I'm gonna do the Boys in the Hood group. I'm gonna do the album, but I'm only gonna do one album. So he asked me what's the number. I wrote him a number on a piece of paper. I slid it to him, and he was like, cool. But the funny thing is, he kept calling me to sign the paperwork, and in the middle of the night, and I was walking into Magic City, to go fuck up some money, you know what I'm saying? Make it rain and all that shit, and he was like, yo, I sent the contract. Just sign it and go to Kinko's and send it back. I'm like, yo, man, I'm walking in my city. I'm not going to fucking Kinko's. And we end up doing it. But it's one of the best things I've ever done because at the time, I wasn't really like a rapper. Like, I was a street guy. So to be in a studio with them and actually see how they was putting records together and really challenging each other, it was an experience because you had to come with it.
Yeah. Did you know any of the guys beforehand?
Nah. And the craziest shit was when I did the Them Boys verse, at that time, I was really learning how to record. To do a verse, it would take me some time because I'd have to break it up and, you know, layer it and put my ad-libs here and all. So it was like when I was doing my verse, like Trick Daddy, everybody was in the studio. And after about 30 minutes, everybody walked out and I heard him in the hallway like, yo, who the fuck is this guy? Like, he's terrible. You know what I mean? And everybody was kind of like, so what I would do when I get done with my verse, I would go in the hallway and have the engineer turn everything up so I could hear it all together. And I never forget, all the people was talking shit, Trick Daddy included, you know what I'm saying? That verse came on, it was like, if it's taking too long to lock up, bro. And I just remember people coming out one by one out of the other rooms, standing in the hallway like, yo, that shit is crazy. And they had me play it 100 times back to back. And that was like one of my most classic verses, but it came because, you know, sitting in the room with other artists, you know what I'm saying? There was actually like Jody and them was nice, you know what I'm saying? Duke, Gee. You know, it was real rappers, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was crazy because it was like, I was a street dude. I'd come to the studio session in Ferraris and shit. you know what I'm saying, BMWs, and I'm like buying everybody pizza and bringing strippers through, like, you know what I mean, because that's my life.
Yeah.
But I'm just showing them, you know what I'm saying?
Well, what's the story? You flew someone down from Def Jam?
I flew the whole Def Jam staff down.
And you pulled up in your Ferrari?
Yeah, but I flew the entire building of Def Jam. I flew them to Atlanta. And I took him out. I took him to the strip club. I took him to.
Did you fly in first class or was it like middle seats?
Everybody I can get on first class. You know, the bosses, you know what I'm saying? And everybody else came in. But it was dope though, because whole Def Jam came. I took him to Magic City, which was where my hub was, where everything was really cracking for me, because it was like that was the center of the city. Then I did a show, had him come to my show, because they had never seen my work.
Yeah.
They just heard the music.
Did you have any doubts at that point? Like, because you're a thorough person. You knew right. who you were, like, in the streets and, like, amongst people in Atlanta. But the music business, for all intents and purposes, was new to you.
Right.
Did you feel like maybe I'm not what they want in an artist?
I didn't really give a fuck, man. I was trying to get out of my situation as far as the streets. And I knew what the streets wanted. Because by the way, I would have never took that deal if I wasn't concerned about going to prison. I would have never took a deal. There was no need. Mm. I was hotter than fish grease. All I had to do was just put some shit out.
So what did Def Jam do to you in that scenario?
Pause. They enabled me to, to go cold turkey on what I was doing before, allegedly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I'm saying? My other job. So it was like, I got a check, which it took me a long time to cash, because it took me like a year and a half to cash my first Def Jam check. But I had it, so I knew it was there. So I bought my mom a crib. I set my sister up. I did all the things I was supposed to do. And then it was just easier on me to maneuver around the world, because now it was like I got a legitimate income. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. It just made sense at the time. Now, had I knew how it was going to play out now, I would have never took a deal.
Never, even though L.A. was good to you,
yeah, but,
Jay was good to you, Shakir.
It was like, you know, I would have been Chance the Rapper before Chance the Rapper.
Right, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was like, I had it like that, but it was just like.
But there was no model for that back then.
Yeah,
like,
but
nobody
under
the
circumstances,
was
it was like, either you're going to go this route and get some of the heat off of you, or you going to go to jail. And at the time, a lot of people around me was like, you know, getting picked up.
Yeah, yeah.
So I really didn't have a choice, yeah.
So did anybody like give you inspiration in terms of like Master P or Cash Money?
Absolutely.
Or like
I grew up on
Jay Prince. Yeah.
I grew up on P. I grew up on Cash Money, Tupac. I mean, I saw their motto. That's how I really attacked the streets. And a lot of people don't know, like, I wasn't really trying to be an artist at first. I was trying to have a label, and it just didn't work out that way. So I was
right,
stuck with the bag.
Your artist, he went to...
They went to jail. Yeah, I got three. One of them got locked up for murder. He's still locked up now. And then... the other two got arrested for something, and then they had some other things go on. So I was just stuck in the studio with like studio equipment with no artists. And it was like, and really like my money was getting low. You know what I'm saying? Because I was spending all my money trying to promote them and buying the equipment and everything. It was like my bread was getting low, and it's just like, shit, like I got to do something. But I love music. So it was like a matter of just going in there, trying it out. So I started like learning little things, and I would go in the studio and sit around other people while they were working and just like get the lingo, you know what I'm saying? Because I didn't know what, like, bring it back, stack that, you know, I didn't know that shit. But I treated it like the streets. It's like, shit, I know how to double some money, you know what I'm saying? So it's like I just learned that way, which was why a lot of my early music was the way it was, so choppy, because I didn't have a style. I just knew how to say like two words, stack those two words, say two. So that's why it took me so long to do a verse. It's like I do two words.
So when did it really click?
Around, for me, I really came into my own around the recession. Like I would make great
that
records.
Long.
Yeah, because I made great records before then, but it was like the recession. I was like, yo, I got this shit.
Yeah.
I got it.
You were like an artist, like, artist on that. Like, yeah.
Like, it was nothing. I was going to the studio. I was
samples.
Writing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It was just like I was comfortable. You know what I'm saying? Like,
did you have like you had a vision for that album?
Yeah. I knew what I wanted to do. I put my cars away. You know what I'm saying? I put my you know, my jewelry away, and I really started doing a lot of research on, you know, because I heard the recession in when I was at a in a meeting, and I heard a guy that I knew was very wealthy say, you know, I'm really concerned about this recession. And I'm just like, yeah, what the fuck is that? You know what I'm saying? And that's how I started getting put on. And I asked him, I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you know, the money is. I was like, but you got money, but that's the point. You want to keep it.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is just for you or everybody? He just started breaking it down. And I'm like, are you serious? Like, yeah, like the world is about to be short on money. I've never heard nothing like this in my 30-some years. I'm just like, So the first thing I did was went and educated myself on it, and then took it back to the streets. And I was like,
How did you educate yourself?
I read up on it. I really got into politics, just understanding how the world was working, reading newspapers, reading articles, reading books, asking people questions, you know, because I learned that, like, you got to ask the questions you don't know. And it's like, it really rained on me. It's like a recession is a drought. That's what we call it in the hood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When it's a drought. But we know it is a drought on some other things.
Right. Yeah.
But how do you explain to somebody it's a drought on money? And they like, I was like, yo, I got to go tell the hood this first. So that's when I came up with the recession. I knew how I wanted the album cover, the black and white flag, what it stood for. And I was like, I got to go tell them what the recession means. Because a lot of people didn't even know what that word meant.
Did you reach out to Don Cannon to get that track?
We did that around maybe like the end of the album, because I was wrapping it up. And he came through and he played and he was like, yo, I got something for you.
Let the dollar circulate.
Yeah. And it was
the
like
the Willie Hutch sample.
Crazy.
He just played me the sample. And I was like, yo, I love it. Then he came back with the bounce. And actually, I think I was so in the pocket, like, and so in, my confidence was so crazy that I think I actually wrote that song with no drums. He just gave me the sample.
Whoa.
And I did my thing, and then he went back and put drums on it.
And so much of that track is drums.
Yeah, because I wanted to do it that bad.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So if you listen to it, I'm going to start off so slow. Yeah, I said so slow to love me out. DC, just like go. There's no drums there. The drums come in after.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
He put the drums after the fact.
What did you think when you heard it, like, complete?
Loved it.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that whole album, man, is like, sonically, everybody that brought me beats hit was on the money. Midnight Black, he brought me like a 10 pack. I used 5. Drummer Boy brought me like a 10 pack. I used like 6. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody was just bringing me, like, everything they brought me, I was just like, yo, this is it. Like, every morning going to the studio was like Christmas. Because every time I got there, everybody would just have, and keep in mind, I'm getting these beats on CD.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's how I like to get my beats. So I'm getting them on CD, and I'm putting them in the CD player, and I'm just like hitting 1, 2, and I'm like, oh, I love this. I love that. I love this. I love that. And it's like, before long, I had like all the songs line up. And the last song, somebody sent me the My President's Black beat. And it was like, I was wrapping up the album and I'm in my condo, and me and my man Mailman, and then I got some headphones on. I walk around with like a little CD Walkman, and I'm just walking around and I'm just humming it. Like, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, yo, I gotta go to the studio. He's like, yo, the album is done. I gotta go to the studio. And I went to the studio and I did My President's Black. And he was just like, yo, this shit is dope, but you know he's not gonna win. I was like, nah, he gonna win.
Yeah.
He won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you know when it's time to, like, wrap up an album?
That album.
Like, because you're in a zone.
Yeah, that album I knew. I wrapped up that album when I was done My President's Black. I knew My President's Black was gonna be the last song in the album, and I already had the album sequenced. I sequenced that album a day before I turned it in, and it took me like 10 minutes. I just knew it.
Because you would live with it for so long.
No, it's just, you know, you get them bodies of work in your career. Where like Trapper Die was like that for me. You know what I'm saying? I knew what it was. Like, I done it, I did it. I was like, yo. And, you know, sonically, every time you're not going, the message can be the same, but sometimes the sonnets can be, like, different from what everybody want at one time. You know what I'm saying? It could be where, say, fans is like, your core fans will love it, but then the people who not into your sound won't get it. But the recession was one of those things, like, the timing of it was urgent, so everybody got it. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, oh, like, this is different, and it feels real.
Yeah.
So it was like, you're going to get those albums. You're going to get that All Eyes on Me or that Machiavelli. But then everybody ain't resonate with Me Against the World.
Mm.
But I love Tupac, so I know the records, but I can't listen to the whole album front to back. It's like certain joints I know. So it's going to be like that. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, sometimes you just get that body of work with everything just line up, and it's just like, everybody love everything.
And do you feel like the recession is that for you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because I knew I was done. When I did it, I started it, I researched it, I did the records, the studio sessions were smooth, I wasn't drinking. Like, I cut out everything. I wasn't drinking, I was working out every day. You know, so I was reading it. It was like a thing. It's like, and I was just loving it.
So
by
focused.
By the way, I dropped 60 pounds for the recession. 60 pounds on my own, no training, no nothing.
Damn.
I educated myself on health during that process, because it was just like, I gotta be healthy. So I started eating right, drinking more water. Like before that, you know, I would drink water like twice a year.
So the weight dropped.
Yeah,
it's a recession.
It is a recession. Right. Yeah, yeah, or drought. It's or a drought. Yeah.
But I would go 8-9 months without really drinking water. You know what I'm saying? I was drinking Cristal every day. But you know what I'm saying?
Well, like, so were you always tired?
Yeah, because I stopped eating meat and everything. You know what I'm saying? Around that time, and just like, I just saw it. And by the way, what I really noticed was I was in Boston. I had sold out show. I was on tour, and this was like right at the recession came out, and normally in my shows, I'm at the House of Blues. Normally in my shows, I remember the venue is like maybe like all the gangsters in the front. You know what I'm saying? This show, after the recession came out and I dropped all the weight, was totally different. It's all ladies in the front.
Yeah.
And I just remember being on stage and I was like, what the fuck are they going on stage? Like, are they doing shit at me?
Yeah.
And I looked up, it was like panties and bras and shit. And I'm just like, yo.
You were at a Trey Songz concert. Yeah.
I'm like, yo, I'm back at the gym tomorrow. I'm never going back. You feel me?
So you never anticipated, like, growing up being like that guy?
When you say that guy, what do you mean?
An artist.
Oh, no. I mean, I was a star at D'Amico. Like, I was always the guy in the hood. But
yeah.
It like, for me, it was like I could do anything I put my mind to, but I knew I could be that guy, but I just didn't know how I was going to deal with the fame part because I'm such a people's person. I'm so balanced. Like, I can be somewhere right now and not even think about my accolades I have. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I can walk outside and not know I got a driver, security, staff, you know, all these things going on because I'm so present.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So for me, it was kind of like, you know, that's the part I had to kind of learn to deal with because just like I'm so present. You know what I'm saying? If I'm somewhere, I'm here. I'm not thinking about what's going on outside, around the corner, around the block, what just happened. I'm present.
And
so with fame, it's like, you know, it's hard to be present. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's always something. So it's like that's the part that I had to work through.
With all that fame that, like, you know, came to you rather quickly, how did you sort of like get it back to normal? Like, do you think that you drank a lot more because of being out there and trying to
adjust to fame and everything?
I think it was more so survivor's remorse. You know what I'm saying? Because you want to take everybody with you, but then you seeing what everybody going through. You're on the road, you're living your life, and you're hearing about your homeboys getting killed and this happened and this person getting locked up and that, and you know, little mama having a baby and your auntie going through this, and it's just like so much. And it's just like, and then you're dealing with the fact that, you know, you're leaving the streets. And then people looking at you like you're changing, and it's like you really don't know who to trust, and you already a gangster at heart, so like you already on go anyway. So now you got to walk the thin line of, if somebody try me, do I motherfucking not, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
go there,
yeah.
Or do I be smart? But then you know how that go at that point in your career, because if you like you don't handle your business, then you get that reputation for not handling your business. So now it's like you kind of, you know, it's like a tight rope to walk, because it's like, you know, you got to be you. But then you got to be smart.
Yeah.
And if you get tricked off the street and then you end up in prison, then you just wasted your time. So it's just a lot of that. And just being out and really just like, you know, going through. Because I was already used to money. I was already used to like hood fame. Like everybody knew who I was from, you know, all the neighborhoods or anything I was affiliated with. But it was just like being around the world, doing it on a different level was just kind of tricky, because now you're in other people's hoods and you got to deal with their politics or how they get down. You're in other cities, so it's just like you got to politic with the right people, but then that brings other things around. Now you got to be more mindful of what you got going on, you know what I'm saying? So it's just like a lot of balancing shit, and I just think throughout it all, I never took the time to get a chance to really learn myself, because I'm coming from the streets into music. So I didn't get a chance to learn my artistry and how I can, like, you know, compartmentalize certain things. So I just brought all my old habits with me, drinking out the bottle, champagne all night, eating fucking Waffle House at 5-6 o'clock in the morning, not working out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, just staying up all day and night. So all these things are just wearing down on you. Then you see yourself on TV, you go like, damn, I look crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, you look fucking, like, you know.
So you've lived a fascinating life. A lot of ups.
Yeah.
But also a lot of downs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and I think you think so too. Like, you put out a documentary
right.
a few years ago.
And in that documentary, especially your younger years, broken home, you were figuring yourself out.
Right.
And you would say that you took these long walks, solitary, you know, just.
Well, the walks was to, okay, this was my plan.
Yeah.
The walks was to the Subway. I used to take walks to Subway.
The sandwich shop.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
But that was my, so I would take, for $2, you can get a 6-inch sub, a drink, and some chips. That was my meal every day for $2. So I used to walk to the Subway and back to eat. But that's all. I only used to spend $2 a day. And I saved everything else I hustled for. So that's how I stacked my bread.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, imagine, how long was that walk?
Maybe like 4 or 5 miles altogether. But that's how I was stacking my bread. So that's the only way I would eat.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I knew I allotted myself like $2 to $5 every day to spend. But I was making like, you know, real hood money, like, you know, $500, $600, $700, $800, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A day, sometimes, you know, $1,500 a week or whatever. But I would put everything up and not spend anything. And I was like, yo, I'm gonna save up this. And I saved my money up to like maybe like 20-30 grand. I was just like, you know what, I ain't never going back. But just imagine those, between the, that $20,000-$30,000, how many walks you had to have back and forth to Subway.
It's a lot of walks.
You're thinking of a master plan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, time. Like, what is going through your head at that time?
I gotta get out of the hood, I gotta make a way, I gotta save my money, I gotta be smart, I gotta. And really, I was a loner, because, you know, nobody thought how I thought. And I see that when I go back home now. I was like, I see homeboys I used to grow up with, and they still living the same life, and they be like, yo, what up? I'd be like, all right. But it's like, you know, I was always thinking outside the box. But what that taught me was my first steps of discipline. You see what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. it taught me how to be disciplined when it came to certain things. So I don't have an addictive personality. So it's just like, that's how I was able to maneuver around a lot of things. Because a lot of my friends ended up on drugs and, you know, alcoholics and all type of crazy shit. But it's just like, I might have dabbled in things, but then I got out of it because I had discipline.
Yeah.
And the discipline was walking back and forth to Subway.
And so you have all that time just to think to figure your way out.
That's the plan.
It's interesting to go from that guy who's just so focused and in your head and, you know, a loner or by yourself or not with many people, to the guy who's in the studio,
right,
and does 4 iterations of Thug Motivation, where you're giving outwardly what you've been thinking about this whole time.
Right.
How do you get from one to the other?
Well, I think the gift of understanding it and then sharing it, because I always been that dude in the hood. Like, if people ask me a question, I got something to give them. But then I go do it myself. So I'm not going to just tell you a bunch of bullshit because it sounds good. Like, I'm actually telling you by experience. So even when I used to hear music back in the day, like P, and that's why I love Tupac so much, because like he was a rebel. But he's also a revolutionary. Like, he had logic, and then he stood for something. And that's what I liked about him. Like, he had rules, you know what I'm saying? He had codes. No matter if they was his or not, he got them from somewhere. And to me, that was like amazing, because it's like, yo, this guy stands for something. So he's not going to just, he's like Hamilton. You know what I'm saying? He's like the Hamilton in the game. Like, he stood for what he stood for, and he was willing to die for that. And I just thought that was amazing. So for me, when I used to hear music, I'm like, that don't really sound like what the streets are sound like. So when I actually got into it, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to give it my truth without sounding like I'm dry snitching, but I'm just going to tell them the truth. And at first, you know, a lot of people was against what I was doing because it sounded like I was telling too much information, but I was only telling.
That's what you heard?
Yeah. Like, because, you know, people would be like, yo, why you telling about hit the brakes, hit the lights, voila. They go, you know what I mean? Because that was a real thing. You know what I mean? You hit the minivan, you hit the brakes, hit the lights, you got a whole stash box. But people are like, why you saying that? And I'm just like, well, that's what I had to do.
I can't not tell my truth.
Yeah. So for me, to give people back my truth, and then the adversity part was what clicked to me. It was like the real no-brainer, because it was almost like, yo, I'm good at this. I'm good at telling people how to overcome something. And I think that's where I should stay. That's where the whole Thug Motivation thing come, trap or die. It's like, you're gonna either trap, or you're gonna take a chance, or you're gonna just take what they give you, and that's just like dying. If somebody gotta give you something to survive, you might as well die, you know, because you're not gonna be able to get it again if they don't give it to you. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So for me, it was just like, that was my truth. Like, let me tell you about this. Thug Motivation, let's get it. That was about, let's get to the money. The Inspiration, which was 102, was like, you know, we got the money now, how do we inspire people? And then when you got from that, it's just like, 103 is just like, okay, we still ambitious. This is a hustler's ambition. Like, I'm still gonna do what I do. I'm gonna be great at it. Then you go from that to The Legend of the Snowman. Is like, when you bottle all this stuff up and tell the story of the guy that was before all of this to get to where you at. You know what I'm saying? So for me, it was just like, if there was a movie, this would be like, you know, part one, the sequel, and then the trilogy, and then here's the documentary.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But to me, it's like, if I sat there and listened to all those bodies of work, I think I would know who Jay Jenkins is,
mm-hmm.
you know, what he's about, because his truth has always been in the music. You know
for
what
sure.
I mean?
What lessons did you learn from your father?
My father was a solid dude. It's crazy. I just got on the phone with him. My father was a solid dude, man. He's just like a good dude. He's a good person. You know what I'm saying? He was a hard worker. Always was about family. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, even when he didn't have, he still just made sure everybody was straight. And to this day, he's like the equalizer. He's like, when things are off, he's a person to come in the family and be like, you know, if it was my grandmother, my uncles or whatever, he just has logic. Let's talk about it. Let's figure it out. Mm. So I learned that from like how to be calm in chaos. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I never really seen him lose his cool a lot. Mm. Until
Does that come from him being in the military?
Yeah, I think so. He's disciplined.
Yeah.
He got it.
Do you think you and your sister are like of the same mentality, or do you think
my sister's a genius.
Yeah?
Yeah, she's smart. She's strong. Witty, you know what I'm saying? She's very like family oriented, and I'm the exact opposite when it comes. Like I'm always on the go. I'm always moving. I'm always like that, you know. But her wits are different. It's like she knows how to keep people together, which I just know how to take care of people. You know, I'm a provider. It's like that's, you know. But she's like the type of person that makes sure like everybody's straight.
Yeah,
everybody's good. The kids are, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. She's that type of person. And she
did she do that for you?
Yeah, my sister used to be my, you know, my sister, my rock. Like she, you know, we have our times, but it's like she's solid.
Yeah,
like she never did nothing that was like flaky. Mm-hmm. Even like back in the day, when she used to hold my money or whatever. Like she's always been solid. And it's like when you grow up, because our brother died. You know what I'm saying? And our older brother. So it's like,
how did that happen?
Stillborn.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So like for us, it was just me and her. But I think on my mom, it was kind of like a burden. So like even for me, it's just like, you know, you coming in, you the middle child, but you're supposed to be, I mean, but you the big brother now. You know what I'm saying? So it's like responsibility, like from go. And it's like I took it on
as a young man.
Yeah. I took it on, but it was just like, imagine growing up in a 2-bedroom trailer and you just like, yo, I gotta get us all out of here. And that's all you think about every day. Like my mother's trailer was, and I bought this trailer for like $2,500. And this is $2,500 of the $100 that I was walking back for the subway to sell. I mean to save. And it's no bigger than this studio. And this is the whole trailer. Everybody lives here. So that's the bathroom. That's my sister's room. This is my mother's room. And that was it.
And this was at the expense of school for you? Like you were like not fully there.
I tried to go to school. I did what I could, you know what I'm saying? But it got to a point where it was redundant and it wasn't really making sense with what I had going on. It's like I had a lot of crazy shit going through my head, because at the time, like, I was, you know, in the streets dealing with shit, and it was wild because it was like I was hanging around, and I was like I would be in the spot while they're, you know, chefing up and doing all this shit, and it's like I had became so exposed to what was going on. It's like I would just had these mental breakdowns in school. And I remember, I swear to you now, I remember one year I knew I was having a PTSD
panic attack.
Well, not a panic attack, but when you actually addicted to something because you've been around it.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Withdrawal. Yeah, I was having to withdraw. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm a kid. I'm new to it, and I'm just standing. I'm in these fumes, and I swear to you not. I went out of the classroom, and I just remember like sitting around, like, oh my fuck, like what the fuck is going on with me? And I called a drug hotline on the phone, like a 1-800 number, and asked them, what do I do? Because I'm freaking the fuck out.
I think,
you know what I mean? I think I might be addicted to crack or some shit. You know what I'm saying? And it was crazy. And I just remember like, calm down, like, yo, you gotta be strong, bro. And that just really, you know, it made me tighten up, because it was like, then I knew it was real, because it was like the money was there, but then you can fall all the way to the dark side, because I seen my friends go, and that used to be my whole phobia, like, I just don't ever want to be over there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it was a real thing, it's real shit.
Did people know that you were dealing in high school?
Yeah, because I mean, you know, it was, you know, once you come up, and by the way, this is nothing I'm glorifying. Like, I couldn't.
No, these are the circumstances.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you how to be a carpenter or build a house, because I wasn't a carpenter. I wasn't a mechanic, so I didn't know about. But I was a hustler, and my family was hustlers, so I was around that. But it wasn't no big deal. Like, you know how people do something so long that it seems right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, wrong so long that it's right. That's basically what it was. It was like, okay, you know what it is, just don't get caught. Don't smoke this shit. Don't, you know what I'm saying? Don't, you know, that's it.
Right. If you go through withdrawal, call up the drug hotline, that's what you do.
But, you know, I promise you now, I just remember being like in my third period class, just on the payphone, like, oh my God, I think I'm gonna fucking jump off a building or something. Like, somebody's got to come save you. Like, sir, are you okay? I don't think so.
So later on, you would go and have a way with words, certainly. You know, you've become like a really...
But it's crazy because I used to have this... So a lot of people don't know. One of my first girlfriends, she was Filipino. And her name was Liza. And I was crazy about it. And I was just like, yo, how am I going to get her? Because, I didn't look the part. So I started writing poems to her. You know what I'm saying? Like that, I would like every day after school, I'd like poems, and I'd slide them to her. And after a while, she started going for them. You know what I'm saying? She was smiling. I'm just like, oh. And I would just say certain things, and I was like, I was getting good at it. So I'd do my little homework, and I'd write this poem, dress it up all nice, and give it to her. And next thing you know, she was my girlfriend.
Yo.
You know what I mean? So I knew then. I was like, I got a way with work. You know what I'm saying? So in my mind, I was like, yo, you know. But as I came into music, I would talk to people. Cause you know I'm the type of person like I'm anybody around me like if I see where you slacking at, I'm be like yo man listen, you know some people take offense to that I love you know constructive criticism like I love it you know what I mean like tell me how to be better, but like I just noticed that about myself cause I observe a lot you know like I said I'm always present so I'll be like yo man like you know you can do this easy if you just like you know cut it this way or you know you're overworking you know what I'm saying so I'm not telling you what to do but I'm just telling you like you should work smart and not hard you know what I'm saying. And it's just like I learned that early on. So with the music, it was easy for me to explain to people where I was coming from because you can look at a situation and see the flaws walking into it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, the object is to get money and get out of it and go do something else. Because if you stay here, you're going to jail, you're going to get killed. So it's like, okay, that's the object. I mean, go get money and go do something else. So I went and got the money, then I went and did music. And it's just like I made this shit work. I didn't lock the door on the rest of these guys coming in because I wanted these guys to come in and eat too. So I didn't go like, yo, I'm the realest trapper. Ain't nobody else. I'm like, yo, this is how you get to this money.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So if you ever notice, if you see right now with a lot of the culture, it's so easy for street guys to rap now because it's been done. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like, I wanted that. You know what I'm saying? I never was against that. But then at the same time, just like, that's why I keep evolving because like, I done that. Now let me go do something else and show you how to do that as well. So the whole thing is like, let me lead by example. So don't just go off of what I'm saying, like let my words match my actions. You know
so
what I'm
from a pride like perspective, like because you take a lot of like joy in your art, like right. you put a lot of work into your art. When you see a lot of these kids now who are just like, oh yeah, I don't rap, I've just been doing it for like whatever 2 weeks, and right. then they get on, they have a single, and it just goes like viral or something right. like that. How do you feel as someone who were like, okay, fine, I'm not a rapper, I'm a trapper, right. but now that I'm rapping, I'm really gonna make it my job to put my all in there. How do you feel about kids who are just like, this is throwaway? When this saved your life.
I think to each his own. And to be honest with you, I just think you get out what you put in it. Like you know, you can be a flash in the pan if you're cool with that. You know what I'm saying? Like or you could be great. You know what I'm saying? It's only gonna be one Kendrick Lamar this generation. Only gonna be one Andre 3000. These guys. It's only gonna be one Tupac. You know what I'm saying? But it was so many people that came out of his generation. You know, you got Chino XL, this one, that. Like, so many people, but he's the guy because he really put something in the culture.
Yeah.
So you can get a fast bag. That's like being a hustler. By the way, that's no different from being somebody who come to the hood and your cousin got to work. You ain't put in no work. Your cousin give it to you, and you just going to make the money, and that's it. Like, you know what I'm saying? But you ain't – it's almost like being a general on the front line in a war. But you're a general because you went to college, not because you
right.
went in the war and got your hands dirty.
You didn't like
So the respect level is going to be different when you're talking to sergeants and corporals that really went out here and lost limbs and you know and friends and you like do it this way and they're like, nah, you haven't been out here, so you're going to be that if you're a flash in the pan or you're just doing something and not putting your all into it, because when that runs out, then who are you? Like, can I really relate to you, or do I just like the words that you put together on a beat that sounds like something else that I might have heard?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Who is somebody that gave you advice? You know, because you were talking about being in the studio, you give constructive criticism to some people give constructive criticism to you. Who's somebody that gave you advice?
Ice Cube. I went to Ice Cube and I thought I was hot. You know what I'm saying? I was like, he called me to come do this song called Loke's Song. And I went to the studio and I was just like, yo, and I was extra'd out. I ain't gonna lie. I was just like, what up, cuz? Dubs, he was like, yo, man, we know you from the block, cuz. Why you cuz me? I'm like, shit, cuz we cuz. You know what I mean? I was just hyped to be around him and I was just like, and I just walked up to Cube. I was like, you know what? You should let me executive produce your next album. He looked at me like, nigga. Like, he looked at me like, yo, like, you bugging. And I was like, nah, I can, you know what I mean? And then he was like, let me tell you something. You know, and that's why I respect Cube, man, because he always been nice. Cube, he do everything Cube way. And he was just like, I get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got your run, but you're going to gain fans, you're going to lose fans, but stay you. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Even when it don't look and feel like the way you want it to feel. Because you could do other things, but just stay you. And I looked at him, I was like, so you're not going to let me execute this? You know what I mean? But that resonated with me because he didn't have to do that. And even when I see him making moves now, I so respect it, because when you see his son acting and playing him and going on to doing Transformers and doing the Big Three, and if he does it right, it's gonna be just as big as the NBA.
Yeah.
That's still Ice Cube.
Yeah.
He never went left or right to progress. He still got respect. He's still solid. Cube solid, super solid.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Family man, the whole nine, but we saw his career, and even when I watched the Straight Outta Compton, I had more of a respect for him, for just his position on how he kept the group together and how just what type of person he was when everything was going down. He was still writing Friday. You know, that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
That just showed me he was innovative. So for him to give me that advice like that early on, you know, I always had respect for him because, you know what I'm saying, he could have took that a whole nother way.
Hey guys, just want to interrupt this episode with a message for anyone in Alaska, Arkansas, Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Minnesota, Missouri, Mississippi, Montana, North Dakota, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Vermont. So if you're in New York, New Jersey, or California, fuck off. We have brand new shirts at itsthereal.com/shop, and we have not sold any to the aforementioned states, and I can't believe it. This is for anybody in Kentucky who's an It's The Real fan. This is for anyone in Mississippi who listens religiously to this podcast, and I do mean religiously. This is for anyone in Iowa or Indiana or Missouri or Nebraska. itsthereal.com/shop is where you can buy an It's The Real t-shirt. We have 4 new shirts there right now. Now is the time to do it. Alaska. No love for It's The Real. Oof. Bring the heat. Go support your boys. Buy a t-shirt at itsthereal.com/shop. And now back to the podcast. Do you have trouble finding people, maybe artists, who have the same drive as you or the same vision as you?
I can't say that because, like I say, to each his own, man. Like, I don't compare myself to people. I don't want people to compare themselves to me. I just want to do what I do my way and be great, you know what I'm saying, for what I want. Everybody lists the goals and dreams should be different. And it's just like, people gotta understand, like I hear it all the time, like you didn't put such and such on, I never got in the game for that. Like, let's be clear. I told you I was corporate thugging from day one, so I was trying to do something else. And then two, like I didn't get in the game to be Barry Gordy or, you know what I'm saying, L.A. Reid. That wasn't my focus. I was trying to get out of the streets.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So my goal was to stay free, get money, take care of my family, put them in a better situation, and figure out the next move.
Did all those things, right? By the way. Yeah.
It wasn't like.
Only thing you didn't do was executive produce Ice Cube. Right. So, yeah.
But it wasn't like I came in the game like, you know, I'm going to be like, you know, the Barry Gordy of this. I'm going to be, you know, that wasn't the focus. And I get people to have that focus, but I just look at the game sometimes when people try to box everybody in because you didn't do that. But my contribution is different because my contribution was to my people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I came to thug motivate. I didn't come to trap. That's just a part of who I was. Like, I didn't come in the game to, you know what I'm saying? I'm like the Tony Robbins of this shit. Like,
which is,
let's be clear. Yeah.
That's got to be wild that your message, look, you're from, you know, rural Georgia. Right. Your message has gone worldwide.
Right.
It's got to be trippy to, like, you know, meet someone so out of, like, you know, like even your wildest dreams. No,
the Michael Phelps, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. When the Olympics and
The Jay Bellis. You know, these are people that, you know what I'm saying? Like, fans that come up to you that you wouldn't even expect. Like, you just helped me so much.
They're sincere about it.
I was with one of my mans last night. We just went and kicked it. You know, he's in a music exec. I was like, dog, you looking like you looking healthy, you look straight. He's like, yeah, I seen you get on that diet plan and stop drinking. And you know, I'm just looking at him like, damn, but in my mind, like, he did that because he saw me do it. But he looks like 100% better person. His mind straight. He tell me about his clarity, but it's just like, you can motivate people by just your moves, but to me, that's more than the music you're selling. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because that's just the message. You feel what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, it's just like, if I can help you change, you know, the way you look at yourself, then that's more than you ever buying or supporting anything that I do. Because, you know, when you think of me, you're going to think of somebody that, you know, actually came and uplifted you. Like, I didn't come to, you know, to judge you or look at you for who you was. Like, okay, I'm doing this. I'm going to take care of myself. And you look at it and go, damn, like, if he do it, I know I can. And that's the same thing with the rap. All the street guys that are rapping now, they going, look, I know Jeezy. Everywhere, every penitentiary in the world, somebody really knows me. Somebody knocking suckers on their back right now for saying shit they shouldn't say because they know me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So when the street cats see me come in the game and come up like that, it was so easy for them to say, music. And if you looked in the last 8 years, music is the new streets because all the street guys are rapping. Mm. Think about it. All the street guys are doing music because it's the only way that you can make the same type of money, be who you are, take the lingo and make the culture work for you and not go to prison. Mm. That's it.
I mean, unless you're Tekashi.
We're not going to claim him. We're not going to claim him. He's on his own.
Well, speaking of actors, there was a moment where you were almost on Entourage. Like, you almost were in the Saigon role.
Shouts out to Ken. I could have been on Entourage, but the tequila was on there, so that's good. So shouts out to Avion. Ken Austin put it together. I was supposed to, which was my partner from Avion, and I was supposed to go do the thing, and I don't know what I had going on, but I was like, nah, I ain't gonna make it. Dumbest shit ever. You know
what I'm saying? I mean, you actually do regret that?
I just felt like, you know, I had other things going on, and then it was like, with me, I prioritize, like, my word. You know what I'm saying? So if I tell somebody I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And I think I told somebody else that I was going to do something for them and I didn't want to change out the date. Mm. And it was an opportunity. It's like, you know what I mean? Like with Dave Chappelle with the what was the Oscars he said he was going to go to instead of Flint. He was like, Flint or the Oscars?
Yeah.
I went to Flint.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you and DJ Drama cross paths in the first place?
DJ Drama was a DJ that was buzzing around Atlanta. Everybody's talking about him because he was doing the mixtapes. I wanted to do a mixtape with him. So my first mixtape was Streets Is Watching, which was initially called G's Up. Truth be told, Drama did not want to do the tape. I asked Drama like 10 times to do my tape. He's like, I don't think the music is hot enough.
Damn.
And so, you know.
How did you take that?
I mean, here we go again. So me, being a thinker, I was like, you know what? I got this dude. So I would go to him. So he lives in the fourth ward in the middle of a hood that I'm very familiar with, and people are very familiar with me in the fourth ward. And I go visit him. I come to his house. He tells me to take my shoes off. I'm like, yo, you in the fucking middle of the hood. Like, you want me to take my shoes off? You know what I mean? So I take my shoes off, come in his house, whatever. So my game plan was just to get him to hear the music.
Yeah.
So how do you get somebody to hear the music that doesn't want to listen to the music? I was like, yo, I give you $500 if you make me a show tape. Keep in mind, I ain't got no shows.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody booking me. But I was going over his house, and I was paying him like $500. He said it was $100. Because I talked to him like last week. He said it was $100, but it's $500.
Okay, let's be clear. Yeah.
Let's be clear.
Yeah.
And I would pay him to do my show tapes. And I would come back to him like I had shows every week. I was like, yeah, we killing him. Can you do this one? And I would put different songs in there. And he was like, yo, this ain't bad. I was like, yeah, I know. You should do my tape.
Yo.
And we kind of got cool there. So after you pay somebody like a couple grand, he started to see you got real money.
Yeah.
He's like, well, let me hear the stuff on the tape that you're talking about. So then.
It doesn't sound so bad anymore.
I took him G's Up, which we had like songs I did with Jazzy Faye, Jody Breeze, all these guys. He was like, yo, it ain't really that bad. And I was like, yeah, could you do it for me? He's like, let me live with it. And he's like, you know what? You know, I don't know what happened. Maybe needed the money for some tennis shoes or he wanted to go spurt. He called me. He's like, yo, I got your tape done. And we did the tape and I put it in the streets. And that was my whole thing, like, just to let you know where I was at on it. It wasn't about the money to me. It was about being heard. So I would go press up 100,000 and just go pass them out.
Where?
All over Atlanta. And there's this club called Prime.
Wait, 100,000 at a time?
Yeah, there's a club called Prime.
Where were you
Prime
keeping
Time.
Them?
My guy, he was pressing them in an apartment. So I had my people go up and grab him by like the 10,000s, whatever, every other night.
He didn't have room for a bed.
Yeah, he was good, but everybody was making money.
Yeah,
sure.
You know what I'm saying? So
sleep on money.
Right. Yeah. So I went to this club on the east side called the Prime Time, and I would like, it was like the biggest thing on Sunday. So every Sunday I would have my people over there just passing out CDs to everybody that came out and then putting a CD on everybody's car. And that's how, and that's why I got my first show.
Yo.
You know what I'm saying? So that was like my thing. And then when I realized that, I was riding down, I was passing the Civic Center one day, and I was going to do something, and it's like this big vote campaign going on, and I seen this vote or die shirt, and I'm just looking like, I don't know about voting. I'm damn so trapped. And that's how I put the Trap or Die shit together, because like, this is a campaign I want to go on. And I did the Trap or Die, and I took him Trap or Die, and when I took it to him and he played it, I just remember looking in his face, and he just had this look like he couldn't believe. Like, when he heard the intro, I just seen his face just looked at me like, yo, you did this shit? Like, you made it? I was like, yeah. He was like, yo, this shit is fucking crazy. And I was like, really? Like, he was like, yeah. But he was like, he was bugging. Like, I never seen drama that spook. Like, he was just like, yo. He's like, yo, I got, he was like, I got goosebumps. And I'm just like, you know, I'm thinking he capping because he want more money.
Yeah.
Like, you go double charge me. And
should have called the drug hotline. Right, like, something's going wrong with him. Yeah.
And then it was dope because he was like, no, this is real. Because I remember playing Trap or Die for my homeboy Westside Blue, and he was like, yo, this shit is crazy. And I was just like, you know, you think people just amping you up.
Sure. Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I said, so he was working on the mixtape. He said, it's going to be a while. You know, I got a lot of stuff going on. Give me about a month. You know what I'm saying?
Drama said this.
Yeah. So I was like, cool, say no more. So in the meantime, I was like, you know what would be dope? If I got a camera and I got in my Ferrari and I rode around and I just talked and I did what I did in the day, because I was getting shows here and there, but people didn't know what I looked like. So they would come, and then I would come out, and they'd be like, you know what I'm saying? So,
right, like, not a snowman.
How do I get them to know who I am? So I was like, yo, I should do a DVD, because I got a month. So I rode around, you know, went shopping, hit the strip club, do all the shit I did, and I actually sat in the editing bay, you know what I'm saying, with the guys, and I was like, yo, I want this right here, that right there. Okay, take this out, put this right. And I sat and edited the whole DVD. And then when I dropped the mixtape, I was just giving the DVD out. So I didn't sell Trap or Die. You know what I'm saying? I was just giving it out the same way. So everywhere you went, every beauty shop, every barbershop, every store, I go in the corner store, put a stack of them on the counter. You're like, oh yeah, come back later on. I was like, give me a box of blunts while you're at it. You know what I mean? And I would do that everywhere. And then like, it was just like this movement, this created around Atlanta. It was like huge. You know what I'm saying? Because everybody was getting this shit for free. So it was like they were sampling your product. And I would go to my homeboys, pull up at their trap houses, and these motherfuckers sitting around looking at me on the flat screen on the DVD like I'm God or somebody. I just couldn't get over that shit, because they watching Trap or Die, listening to Trap or Die. And I'm just like, yo, this shit is crazy. And I'm still trying to figure the music thing out. I don't have a record deal yet. I'm still figuring out how I'm going to monetize it and go. And when we dropped Trap or Die, I swear to you, I remember sitting in the studio with Jazzy Faye, Trick Daddy, all these people, and they like, you should save that for your album. And I was like, my album's gonna be way better than this. And it was like, there's no way. And I was like, and it was like, you shouldn't put this out. And I was like, I went against what everybody said, because I felt it, and I put it out. And I swear to you, other than having my kids, that's the best decision I ever made in my entire life.
Man.
I think about it every day. Every time I perform those songs, I'm like, that's the best decision I ever made. Because had I made that decision right now, My number would have been 057-294 inmate. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
Straight up. And that changed my whole life.
Shakir takes notice, right?
Yeah, Shakir.
LAJ, Def Jam, you have that deal. Now all of a sudden, you're collaborating with people.
Well, it wasn't just that easy though, like, because it was like, you know, Shakir saw it because he was in the city, so he would see my movement. I would be out 200-300 people, you know what I'm saying? Ferraris, Bentleys, everything, because it was a street movement. You know what I'm saying? We in the club, messing up money, you know, buying Cristal, about hundreds of bottles. Like, it was a lifestyle, but the music was like the soundtrack. So that's why even when you think about 104, the 104 takes you before that. You know what I'm saying? So people just got onto me when I was trapping, dying, thug, motivating. So they didn't know the stuff that was going on before that. So that's why you go back to the legend of and go back before that. But Shakir saw that, and when I went and signed with Def Jam, he was LA's right-hand man. So he would be telling LA what was going on in real time, because they didn't know this in New York. He's like, yo, man, this kid is down here really. And I never forget it. I was like, yo, I want to shoot Trap or Die and the song I got with Bun B called Get Money Over Here.
Yep, we were just
talking with Bun yesterday. Yep. Yeah.
And I was like, yo, can I, you know, you guys gonna give me the money to shoot this video? And it's like, no. And I was like, all right, cool, say no more. So I went to Miami, took like 500 of my people down there, and I went and shot the videos myself.
Two videos?
Yeah, two videos.
Yeah.
And
at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Yeah.
And Shakir, I just remember like through all the meals, I just remember like, cause you know, Shakir, he's slick, he'll come stand around, you know what I'm saying? And I just remember him just looking and reporting in, like, yo, he's going down. It's just crazy. Cause we had all these cars out. Everybody came through. Bun came. And you gotta think, like, round in, like, Bun was like the biggest.
Yeah. Everything. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It was Bun B.
Yeah. You know,
he's still that now. But yeah, like, yeah. He was like Bun B or UGK. And it's like, to have him on the record. And I remember getting him on the record. I had to call one of my street guys named D. Me and D was cool, but we had like some money problems back in the day. So we kind of had a little beef, kind of, sort of. And then I had to call him to get, because he was Bun. I was like, yo, don't worry about the money. You know, can you get Bun beat for me? He's like, yeah, that's the homie. I got you. So he called Bun. Bun called me back on the phone. I'm all nervous and shit. I'm like, yeah, Bun, I got this song. I want to get you on. He's like, yo, man, just send it. I'll knock it out. So Bun did the song, Get Money Over Here. We did the video. And I never forget, I was in Patchwork Studio, and I was working on Trap or Die. And I was nervous to play Bun Trap or Die because it sounded so different. I was like, I got this song. I think you would be dope on it. And then he was like, just play it. And I was like, and I'm trying to explain to him why I'm playing it. Like the
thing behind it.
Same color, Tropicana, orange juice. Yeah. I'm trying to explain like so he won't think it's corny. And he like, yo, this is the hardest shit I ever heard. And I'm like, what? And he went in there, he knocked the verse out. And I never forget when I heard that verse, I was like, yo, this is classic. You know what I'm saying? This is classy. And this is like the second verse that Bun B. And I think he did that one for free. Because I paid him for the first one. Bun got his chips.
Yeah.
He got his bag. But the second one he did for free. And that was like the beginning. Because they had so much respect. So you got to think you're getting Texas and Austin and Houston and all these things by collaborating. So to answer your question, like just like doing these collaborations, like it was those early on collaborations that solidified what I was doing. Like the Bun, Trick Daddy.
Yeah.
Fabulous. And
totally.
Fabulous was another one. I was at the video shoot with him and they were shooting the BMF joint. And I met Fab through Meek, so he's like, Fab's like, let me play this record. And he played me Breathe. And I just remember sitting there like, oh, I'm in the studio making trap rap. And he played me Breathe. And I'm just like, one into the two. So I'm just like, yo, this shit is crazy. And he's like, yo, what you about to do? I said, I'm about to go to studio.
Get a Just Blaze track. Yeah, you know, that's what I'm about to do.
Yeah. And he was like, I said, I'm about to go to studio. He's like, I'm going to pull up. So he came through, and then we was over there just kicking it. And then he's like, I got this song. He was like, you know, if you can put a hook on it, you can get on it. So he played me to Do the Damn Thing beat. And I heard the beat, and I was like, I'll do it, but I need to put a verse on it. He's like, yeah, go ahead. So I heard something he said in the verse, and I made it the hook. And I remember that night was legendary. I had this blue Moschino shirt on with the graffiti paint on it, with the pant, the shorts and everything. And I remember being in the studio with my shoes off, laying on the floor, smoking a blunt, writing my verse. And then I went in there and they was like all laughing around, kicking it. And I went in there verse by myself. And I was, my phone is tapped. And so is my living room. We can't hide the money here. We need a bigger room. And I came out. Everybody was in the studio like, yo, man, this is crazy. And I remember like, you know, this is fabulous. So I'm like, you like the verse? He's like it. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, I love it. And I was just like, oh, okay. So it was like, that was building my confidence. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, these are people that I respect. I was a street dude. I was thorough, but I'm still fans of music. I mean, you know, he's got songs with J-Lo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the one that you choose.
Right. It's F-A-B-O-L-O-U-S. I'm like, yo, this is crazy. But it started happening like that. So when it came down to it, when I walked in the Def Jam building, my mind was made. I looked at Jay-Z. I was like, yeah, you're going to get on Go Crazy. He was like, you think so? I was like, no, you are.
Yeah.
I'm serious. You're going to get on. I'm on Def Jam, right? You got to do this. And he was like, okay, yeah, we'll see. And I remember Jay called me. I was in L.A. I think it was like BET Awards. And he was like, yo, come to my hotel. So I went to his hotel. Met him at the Beverly Wilshire. We like sitting on the patio. You know, he's doing his Jay-Z shit. You know what I'm saying? I was just like, and he looked at me and said, so I'm going to do the song. And all in the back of my mind, I was like, ooh, hate me. I'm from Georgia.
Yeah.
It's my first album. And I got Jay-Z on the album.
And he killed it.
By the way, he kills everything that me and him do. I don't know if it's like inner like trap wars going on, but or we bring something out of each other. But when I heard that verse, I'm just like, yo. And by the way, that song that song was a beat that I got that beat from Don Cannon, but it was on a T.I. mixtape. So T.I. had the beat first, and he just freestyled on it, and I was like talking to Ken. I was like, yo, can you get me a beat like that? He's like, yo, Tip, just freestyle. You can have it. I was like, yo, I can have this beat? He's like, yeah. So I did the song. I had two verses on it, and when I played it at the listening session for Def Jam, like, everybody was going crazy, and I saw Jay bopping. I'm just like, yo, I got to get him on that record. So just to think about all the steps that record went through, even when it got mixed to where when they was mixing it, the engineer who was mixing it wanted to take the horns out in the verse. And I was like, no, you're crazy. The horns got to stay in there the whole time. And I had to sit there and have an argument with him. And God bless the day, Shakir Stewart was like, just do what he wants you to do. You know what I mean? And we kept the horns in it, and that's what made Trap Star, Go Crazy Legend.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like all those steps that went through it. But you got to think, you got a kid from Georgia that was giving out his mixtapes, that was hustling in the clubs, getting everybody like his music, got paid $200 for his first show, and he got his first album, and Jay-Z's on the album. Crazy.
Nuts. When you went up to Jay, and right. you were like, you're going to be on this,
right.
how, in the back of your head, how much did you believe yourself?
The same as I do today.
Sitting here?
Thousands. One thing I do pride myself in, if I want something, I'm going to get it done. I don't give to how many, there's a yes out there somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Like, you tell me no a trillion times, it's going to be one yes.
Right. Even if you don't get Jay-Z, you get, like, Angelus.
No.
You
know?
I might get somebody who just sounds like him.
I might not get Jay-Z, but I'm getting Sean Carter. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to get one of them.
Yeah.
Yo, what about Seen It All? How did that come together?
I did the record, and I called him. I was like, yo, I got this crazy record. And
it is, shout out to Cardo. That's fucking
crazy. And what it was I sent it to him, and I was like, okay, you got to just fill in the part on the hook. And when he heard it, he was like, yo, and he sent it back. And I heard what he said on the hook, and I was just like, yo, this is crazy. And it was like this whole thing because me, him, and Emery,
mm-hmm. shout out to Emery,
and Tata and all them sat in his office. And I swear to you, dog, we talked about the, like, we was going to shoot this video. We was going to fly in on all these jets on the runway. We was going to go take over Live. That was the plan. We was going to go to Live and just take it over, me, Jay-Z, and be like, yo, everybody pull up. It's in Miami. It was going to turn it out. Then we was going to ride down Ocean in the cars and the drop Bentleys and all that stuff. And we was going to shoot the video. It was like done. And we couldn't get the damn sample cleared. Because I only got, it took, because it came out of China or somewhere. So we had to find the people in China. So it was like months and months. I'm like, yo, I got Jay-Z running to shoot a video. This is crazy. So by the time the sample came in, he was on something else.
Yeah, yeah.
But we sat there, all me, Jay, Ty, Emery, and came up with a whole, like, yo, we're going to fly in. We're going to have the jets back to back, like eight jets, puff. Everybody's going to be crazy. We're going to get in these cars. We're going to go to Live, and we're going to just gonna get on, like, tell everybody just to come. It's going to be this. I mean, it was like a whole thing. We sat in his office for, like, hours just talking about this video.
God damn.
And I was so ready, man, but we couldn't find the people in China.
Yo, that's the one no that you couldn't get a yes from, you know?
Yeah. I got the song clear.
No, you did get the
yes. I mean, you got the yes.
I got the song clear, though.
Yo, where was your head at when you recorded Me Okay?
I was really just messing around. Me Okay, like, it's like Me Okay for a Jeezy record, it wasn't one of my favorite records.
Really?
Like, yeah, because it was just like me popping. I love the beat. And the thing about me and Drummer Boy is just like, I know what a classic Drummer Boy and Jeezy song is. It's like Put On. It's Standing Ovation. You know what I'm saying? It's those type of things. So it's like we have records that we got that are kind of like throwaways or whatever. And that just happened to be one. And it's just like it came out some kind of way. And people kind of liked it because it sounded like something that might sound like something.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And it was cool, but it's just like, I didn't even really like, you know, I really didn't even think twice about it.
Because I think there's some things that you say in there where maybe you were like renegotiating with Def Jam, right? And you talked about they
didn't like that either.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah, I'm shocked.
But it's interesting because, so you didn't anticipate signing with Def Jam in the first place. Or any label in the first place.
No, I knew, because my first sit down was with Lior. That was the first person I sat down with, Lior.
He was at Warner?
I think he was at Atlanta. He's either Warner or Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I was just like, Lior is like an old mobster.
Yeah.
I was like, yo, I gotta sign this dude. He was like, I'll crush a, he said, I'll crush an ant with a sledgehammer for you. I was like, so.
Yeah.
I like this guy, you know what I'm saying? But then I went and sat with L.A. And L.A. just got so much like savoir faire, just like, he cool, like L.A., you know, smoking his Cuban, sipping his Louis XIII. I'm like, damn, I like this too. You know what I mean? And yeah. We just resonated because it's like, you know, he had Andre 3000, Outkast, so he clearly knew what was going on. But what made me sign to Def Jam with confidence was Shakir Stewart. Mm. That's what made me be like, I want to be where Shakir is at, because I know he's going to make sure I'm good. And he did.
And through your time there, and that's like 10 years or more. There's been a few different regimes, like, right. And people that, you know, we've seen by your side, like Pekos was there.
Yes, I saw the Pekos, yeah.
Steve was there.
Yeah, Steve,
right?
Bartles.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Steve, man.
Yeah.
Steve, good guy.
And then things change, and people come and they go.
They did.
And this is your last album on Def Jam, correct. Is that correct?
Where's your head at now?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I got the game. I learned the game. So, like, for me, it's just like, my move can be whatever, you know, I want to do. Because it's no pressure now. You know, I understand what it is. I know my worth. I understand how the game's set up. So it's just like, I know how to navigate through it. It's got to be what's best for me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, because a lot of people don't know, like, you know, I own my master's at Def Jam now.
Really?
Yeah, I got my master's back.
When did that
Congratulations,
happen?
Congratulations,
yeah. That's a big deal.
Yeah, I got my master's back. So that was a whole process, too. Like, so it would be like a lot of space between the albums, and then your fans don't really understand, like, you're in the back negotiating. So it's like, I'm not turning into an album until I can. So we had to negotiate that. So that took some time. So, you know, I was really on my business tip. So it wasn't really about the music, but I'm like, I'm not doing another album until I get my master's. So that was like a whole thing. So now I have my master's, you know what I'm saying? And now I can maneuver how I want to maneuver. You know what I'm saying? So it's a different game now.
Like, did you look at it like when, you know, you get recruited to a college, but then the coach like leaves and you're just like, well, I'm still here.
I learned the
I want to play for myself.
I learned the second week when I was signed. The second week I got signed by Kevin Lyles and L.A. Reid. 2 weeks after I got signed, Kevin Lyles called me. I was in the barbershop getting my hair cut. And he said, I just want to let you know I'm leaving Def Jam, going to Atlantic. And I was like, are you serious? And I was there and I'm just like, yo, how does this work? Because I'm cool with L.A., but like I don't have a rapport with him like I do with Kevin. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, damn, man. And I'm optimistic about things. And I had a good feeling, but it was like, Kevin's gone. I go to the building maybe like a month later. And I'm walking in the building. I see a Maybach pull up. I'm like, okay. Door open. Outs, Jay-Z. As I'm walking in the building, he's like, yo, Jeezy, what up? I'm like, what's up, man? Me and him sit outside, chop it up for a minute. He's like, yo, by the way, I'm the new president up here. If you need anything, holler at me. I'm just like, yo, only do it. Look at God, baby. Look at God. Look at God. This is my man. I'm like, let's go up to the office, baby. And me and Hov we just locked in. You know what I'm saying? I met Hov like that on my own. I knew him, but I like, this is a business relationship now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He's the president. So it's just like, and he's my man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he understands what I'm trying to do. So it worked in my favor.
So there's a lot of people who are never, ever going to get a J-verse.
Right.
You guys have like gone back and forth.
Yo, I got more songs with Jay-Z than he does with Biggie Smalls. Ain't that crazy?
Very.
Count it up.
Yo.
I got more songs with Jay-Z than he has with Biggie Smalls.
By the way, I think you got him on the Blueprint 3 track.
Which one? Really?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Truth be told.
Yeah.
All right. But
you know, I gave him that record.
Did you really?
Yeah.
You had it.
I gave him that record. It was my record. I called him.
Him on it?
No.
Oh.
I did the record. I had it. And then, because I got the record from Khaled, the beat. And I did it.
Did he produce it?
I think the Runners or somebody
okay,
did it.
Yeah.
And I had it. And I'm talking to Jay. He's like, yo, I'm finishing under the Blueprint. He's like, yo, man, I need some streets. I said, I got you. Say no more. And I sent it to him. And he hit me back. He was like, yo, you ain't never lied. And he put a verse on it. And he sent it back. And he's like, what you think? I was like, it's it. And he got me on the tour. So we're doing the Blueprint 3 tour.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. The song.
Yep.
You, Trey Songz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just imagine that. I just gave Jay-Z a record for the Blueprint 3. You know what I'm saying? That I had on my drive.
Crazy.
Right. But but it was one, I swear to God, it was one line on the song. It was like, ladies, put your hands in the air if you ever sucked a You know what I'm saying? He's like, yo, you got to change that line. Nobody's going to do that shit at the show. It's like, yeah, you smart. So we changed that line because he's like, yo, the fellas ain't going to be with this shit. I was like, yo, you're right, man. This is all bad.
But do you think that you and Jay connect on like another level that like...
Yeah, like I'm going to be real, man. People talk their shit about Jay-Z, man, but like that's my friend.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Fuck rap, fuck money, fuck music, all that. Like he a good dude. You know what I'm saying? And you know, of course, he going to do what he needs to do, just like I'm going to do what I need to do. But our conversations aren't like music based or what we could do for each other. They always like,
it's a real friendship.
Yeah. Like, yo, what's going on? You straight? You know, I'd be like, I ain't seen you in a month. He's like, yo, how's that possible? You know what I'm saying? Like, he a good dude, but you know, he like me, like, what? I take that back. Like, I'm the type of person that'll tell somebody, you know what I'm saying, like, what I think could make things better for them. He's the type of person, he'll do little things, and if you pick up on it, then that's on you. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to put the information out there for you to pick up.
Yeah.
You got to either get it. And I respect that because, like, when you have that much knowledge, you can't just go around giving it away. That's your value.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's one thing I kind of picked up from it. And a lot of the things that he was doing with and for me, like, even like the tour, he was like, you know, if you really think about it, you going out with Jay-Z, it's me, Jay-Z, and Trey Songz. And he's like, yo, I don't want to just go do a concert. I want to do a show with you. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I think you should come out in the middle of my show. I was like, what? Like, yeah, you should come from under stage. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to let you use my band, so I don't got to get banned. I don't got to pay for visuals. He let me use all his shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he got his band playing my music and everything, and then he put me in the middle of his show, which was smart, because he like, yo, see, because when we go to these cities, people who are going to come to the show early are going to think they miss you.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you come out of the ground, and it's fucking crazy. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, yo, this is crazy.
Yeah, we were just talking about it. We saw you down in Jersey.
At the Borgata.
Yeah.
You guys had a show down there. And by the way, Stevie Wonder was in the audience.
Yeah. It was crazy. And it was like, the way he set the show up, it was like, you know, he let me use all his production stuff, and it was real. And people don't do that. And I'll never forget, I was in New York when that was going on, and some of my security guys, and I told them, like, you know, you guys don't bring your firearms into New York, leave them in Jersey. But somebody thought it was a good idea to bring them with them. And all my team got locked up when I was here at the Garden?
Madison Square Garden.
God damn.
I got a show at the Garden and my whole staff get locked up. You know what I'm saying? Now I got to go do Philly and all these other cities. So it was like 10 of us on the road. I show up to the show with like one other person that I had to fly in. Jay like, you okay? I'm like, yeah, I got this. I ain't got no sound guy. I got nothing. Yo, this is me. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, damn, I can't let him know.
They're like, Jeezy's so low maintenance. Right. Like,
I can't let him know I'm in trouble. And then he was like, after the show, he's like, should we talk? I was like, yeah, we should talk. I was like, yeah. So, you know, he's like, I already know what happened. I was like, yeah. So, yeah, it was dope.
I'm so glad that you mentioned on your record Kanye.
Right.
And how he's talking like, you know,
He's
on Ye.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and it's fuck Trump.
Right.
I'm so glad you said that. There's a lot of people out here who are either letting him slide because he makes hot music. And by the way, we're the biggest Kanye fans in the world.
Were.
No. That's true, though. Yeah. That's true, though. Like, it was, like, beyond disappointing. And it's just like, what are you doing rocking the hat? Like, what kind of message are you sending? Like, how do you... We're all humans here. Like, this is beyond just music and beyond, like, an ego play. And it just became this bigger thing. But thank you for saying something and putting it on wax.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah. No, that's real.
Yeah.
Because, like, you've made great music with him, too. And it's just, like, it's such a bummer to, like, see somebody that you believe in, who you think is on the right side of things, who has stood up for, you know, the right side of things. Right. And then...
say things sort of like without care, without real thought.
Yeah.
Before you get out of here, I want to know, what's the best BMF club night or party that you've been to?
Oh, man. Has to be the King of the Jungle party. That's the one where they had all the animals.
Oh, yeah.
Lions and tigers and bears. But more extraordinary than that, I just remember... I don't know if you're familiar with Perrier Juliet.
Yeah.
The champagne. So
that's all we drink.
Yeah. You know.
With the roses on it. Mm-hmm. That's like the top of the tier. I just remember walking out of the club that night. We're going to the after party and just looking around and just seeing all these bottles that were half empty that people just started to drink and sat down like they was Sprites or Coca-Cola or something because they wasn't used to drinking champagne.
Mm.
And I just remember looking around the club at all these trash cans that they had lined up around the side of the club that they put the champagne in the ice in the trash can. So people were actually like a cookout.
Yo.
You go in there and you're getting champagne out of the trash cans. And I was just like, yo, this shit is crazy. So basically, like, the biggest club in Atlanta, he paid for everything for everybody just to come party.
Man.
For his birthday. But you talking like 500-600 cases of champagne.
Man.
Crazy.
Very crazy. Yeah. Jeezy, first of all,
104 out right now.
Thank you for dropping by.
Shouts out to Figures Wireless, you know what I'm saying? Defiance Fuel, ladies and gentlemen. Check me out on my new ventures. We got this Figures Wireless right here. It's Android. It's our newest edition right here. We got the earbuds, you know what I'm saying? Which actually translate languages in real time.
Madness. It's
amazing. Yeah, so shouts out to that. And shouts out to Avion, Tequila. And, you know, TM104, baby. Hey, y'all guys are cool, man.
Oh, thank you. No, we appreciate that.
I got that AK, man. Yeah, yeah. You can get caught with it.
Appreciate you. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of Waste Time with It's The Real. Jeff, people want to find out more about us. I'm Eric with the curly hair. You're Jeff with the glasses. Together, we are It's The Real, ITSTHEREAL, no apostrophe, no spaces. If people want to find out more about this podcast, it's called Waste Time with It's The Real. 270-something episodes that people can go back in the archives and check out and rate and review on iTunes and leave a comment that hopefully is somewhat nice. Whatever. Jeff, if people want to find out more about what's going on with us, where they can get the t-shirts, where we're going to be on tour, where we have gotten to in our lives, where can they go? You can always go to itsthereal.com, ITSTHEREAL.com. Go there for our newsletter. Go there for our merch. Go there for anything you want. It's The Real. It is there. You can also find all of our old episodes, all of our new episodes. If you go to any streaming platform, including the one you're listening to right now. Twitter at It's The Real. Instagram at It's The Real. Facebook, It's The Real on there. All right. So this is the time on the podcast where we like to shout out all of you guys out there who want to be shouted out. So, Jeff, who was looking forward to this episode with the snowman, Jeezy himself? Malcolm Flex, Guapo Negro. I just want to shout out Esther's Ute, but God's Son, Kwakunali. I want to shout out Sacamil. I want to shout out Bloody Boral, Misty, Vaughn Lewis, all the way in Texas, Aaliyah Simone, Bitchy Poo. All right, and Lusty McFarland, a.k.a. One Fucked Up Mind, somewhere in West Virginia. Shout out to all you guys for listening. Shout out to all you guys for spreading the word. As always, not for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
See you guys next week.